My name is Mark Franklin, and you're listening to Career Buzz for Wednesday, September 25. Today on your show, people helping people, from youth outreach to a student of life. This is Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at CareerCycles.com. Thanks for tuning in this morning. As managing director of Westside Arts Hub, Andrea Bucco promotes the arts to community members, local organizations, and the broader arts community. She's worked in arts and social service for 15 years in roles that include child and youth worker, community support worker, youth employment site manager, studio manager, business owner, and creative director. In 2001, Andrea was awarded the Outreach Worker of the Year Award. Also with me this morning is Matthew Taylor. Matthew is author of Student of Life, My Lessons Are Yours. Even as a child growing up in Scarborough, Ontario, Matthew was writing songs and poems. Known for his gift of gab, friends and family said he'd be a lawyer. But Matthew's adolescence included some bad decisions and being kicked out of high school. During that period, he also traveled North America playing soccer and learning discipline. But the pressures of being a young father forced Matthew to do some soul searching in order to fulfill his potential. He went to college as a mature student and now has a career leading entrepreneurial ventures, writing, and speaking. Matthew Taylor, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you for having me.
And Andrea Bucco, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you. Thank you for having me as well.
Great. Thanks for joining us this morning. Matthew, what do you like about your career these days?
I like freedom and flexibility. The fact that I write, it allows me to work on my own schedule. So the flexibility is a great thing. I get to work when I need to work. If I want to pick up my kids from daycare or school, I have the freedom to do that as well. So flexibility would be the number one thing.
Right on. And what are all the things you're doing now? I said that you're leading entrepreneurial ventures, you're writing, you're speaking. What's a typical week look like?
Well, I just started a mortgage consulting business. I am now working with the Mortgage Center, who is the top mortgage brokerage in the country. As you said earlier, I am a published author. So now that the book's written, I've been working hard to create opportunities to present the book to as many different outlets as possible and put it in the hands of the people that need it most. I spend time going to different communities, doing public speaking. As of this Sunday, I actually will have a Authors Network event, which I will be speaking at. This is going to be at 2350 Finch Avenue West. October 1st, I'm also going to be a guest speaker at the Youth Justice Network meeting, which is going to be including a very talented panel. And we're going to discuss some of the important issues for the youth today and how we could keep them out of trouble. Other than that, Student of Life, I'm looking to turn MyLessonsAreYours.com, which is the book website, into a blog where we can make a high-value, highly informative outlet for people who are looking for information regarding their particular interests. Let's see.
So that's good. What would you say are the top one or two skills that you draw on, that you use to be successful doing what you're doing?
Just not being afraid to speak and articulate and get my point across. That's been a vital skill. Also, you know, you have to know how to negotiate, and you have to learn how to ask for what you want while also allowing others to get what they want at the same time. I think that's the most effective way to close deals.
Right on. Not being afraid and taking this initiative.
Absolutely.
Really important. Andrea Bucco, over to you. What do you like about your career leading the Westside Arts Hub?
Well, I'm an arts fanatic. Any type of art that exists, I'm into it. I want to check it out. So I think that's the best part of my employment right now, is really being able to work within the arts and culture sector in the city of Toronto, connecting various arts organizations and individuals together and seeing how we can build this sector that include young people within the city.
And so what do you do as the leader, or I think you're the director or called the executive director? What are the things that you do?
Well, the Westside Arts Hub is a unique partnership with the Toronto Public Library. We are an arts hub that exists within the library. This is the first of its kind in the city of Toronto. I can actually only find this duplicated in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
This started in 2008. We received funds from the city of Toronto to revamp the basement through what's called the Neighborhood Action Partnership Table. From there, we took $500,000 and put in an arts hub, office spaces. So we have currently landing office spaces for grassroots arts organizations. We also book arts organizations who want to use a space, as long as you're making annually under $100,000. So our goal definitely is to work with starting up organizations, starting up individuals, individual artists, and really pushing their career forward and giving them, I guess, a space that is filled with all of the things that they need to progress their career.
Great. I think I saw on either the blog or your Facebook page, there was a quote from Jane Jacobs about the use of buildings. It was something like, old ideas need new buildings, but really new ideas use old buildings. Something along the lines of that, mm-hmm. It sounds like. So you're utilizing this existing library. You're using an old building to bring a new idea.
Yes, we are located in the Jane and Finch community in Yorkwood's library in the basement. So like I said, we do have two landing spaces for individuals who want to book the space, but as well an existing office that I use, that I do use, I guess, co-use with community as well, too.
Yes. And what are the skills that you use, the top one or two skills that you use to be successful in this career of yours?
I think a lot of it is networking, mm-hmm. really putting yourself out there to meet people. I think, as Matthew said, not to have that fear, you know, really connect. There's a lot of interesting things happening in the city, and it just takes that want to check it out, to go in. You know, people are very welcoming. I think sometimes we as individuals feel like, well, I don't know, so maybe I shouldn't go. But everywhere I've been, people have been more than welcoming. They're willing to collaborate. They want to know what you're doing and, you know, vice versa. So really just putting yourself out there.
Yes. We're talking to Andrea Boucault and Matthew Taylor here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CIUT.FM worldwide. We are going to have a giveaway. Matthew has generously brought a copy of his book, Student of Life. So in the second half of the show, we'll have a giveaway. It'll be a call-in if people have questions or comments on some of the lessons that we're going to talk about. So do stay tuned. There's a copy that will be made available starting after 11:30 this morning, and we'll check that out afterwards. But before we get there, Matthew, let's step back. I said a little bit in the intro about your story, and it sounds like you have quite a story that brought you here today.
Yes.
So first of all, you grew up in East Scarborough. What was your neighborhood like that you grew up in?
It wasn't a very bad neighborhood, to be honest. My parents, they worked very hard to, you know, create some fairly decent circumstances for us. So I grew up in the McCown and Finch area, and what was great for me is it was very multicultural. I went to school with Chinese, Indians, whites, Egyptians, you name it. So from an early age, I learned how to deal with different nationalities, and it became, you know, natural.
Really diverse out in that part of Scarborough.
Yeah, and I think that helped me out later on in life, most definitely.
And then what happened? You had an interest in writing and speaking. It sounds like it goes way back. What inspired that? What started that?
I really don't know. I liked to write before I even really knew what writing was. I guess it just came back to me having a need to express myself. So that's how it started, and I kind of just never left it. It was just something that I always did.
Now, something happened in high school.
Yeah.
Right? I said in the intro that bad decisions and being kicked out of high school. What happened?
I do remember a couple incidents where I think I just kind of lost faith in the system. I remember one particular incident where there was a gentleman in my class that happened to call me, you know, a profane name that I'm not sure I can even say on the station right now. But I remember seeing the teacher continue to conduct the class like it never even happened. And, you know, it kind of distorted my image of school because we were grown up, you know, to think that school emphasizes right and wrong and that it actually mattered to them. And after, you know, a few incidents, I didn't really feel that way anymore. It kind of felt like almost just brainwashing or, you know, the teacher's talking about his trip to the cottage rather than really giving us enlightening information. So I just went through a rebellious period where I kind of had to go out there on my own and learn some hard life lessons and find some of my own answers.
So it sounds like one of the things that helped you during that rough part of your life was soccer, sports and soccer. Where
Absolutely.
Did that come from, and what happened with your soccer playing? And how did it influence your thinking about the way things were working out in your life?
Soccer came about my early teens. I was just playing house league as a recreational thing, and I played about half a game house league, and one of the more major coaches for the bigger teams came and approached me and my dad with an opportunity to play for the bigger team and start traveling over North America. We went to Indianapolis. We went to Florida. We went to other places in Ontario. You know, we beat a lot of teams and eventually became champions. So it definitely instilled discipline in me. It showed that when you do work hard, that you're going to get the results that you deserve when you work hard. And, yeah, that's how soccer came about. School just wasn't really it for me. I just didn't have any interest in it around 16, 17, 18. It's just something I went through.
I think a lot of listeners can relate to that. There are a lot of people who just don't feel like they fit in with the structure, the process of the traditional school atmosphere. Yeah. I know later in your story you come back to school and college, and I'm looking forward to hearing how your perspective of yourself as a student changed.
Yes.
Because for sure it did. But before we get there, you also became a father fairly
yes.
early in your story. Now, that also can greatly influence one's perspective. How early did that happen, and what happened?
I became a father at 18, which was long before I was ready to become a father. You know, I absolutely had a lot of maturing and growing up to do on my end. But at the same time, I'm grateful for how things happened, because when I connect the dots now, they were all instrumental in me making the choices that I made to lead me to be here today.
So when you say connect the dots, I use that expression a lot. We speak to a lot of clients about connecting the dots between their education and their career and the things that they do. It often can be easy to look backwards and connect the dots after you arrive somewhere and you can see, whoa, these are the dots that I followed.
Right.
But when you're standing on a dot, 18 years old, you've left high school, you're a young father, not quite mature, as you've already said,
yeah.
trying to figure out what the next dot will be.
Mm-hmm.
What was your life plan at that time?
At that time, I was strictly focused on music, and my ambition at that time was to be a musician. As time passed, I started to notice other skills and talents that I have, so my outlook got a little bit more diversified, but at that specific point in time, you know, my tunnel vision was on my music career.
So what changed? You had music as the, you know, front and center piece
yeah.
of your plan.
Yeah.
Something eventually led you back to school. What was that?
I'd say in my early 20s, I got really, really heavy into reading books. And that opened up my mind to a whole new world of opportunities. The more I read, the more I knew. The more I knew, the more I taught to, you know, even my friends or people willing to listen. And, you know, I noticed that I had a particular talent for that. You know, people would tell me, you know, something you said really made a difference, or people I considered smart would come to me for insight. And, you know, it just made me wonder if I should look into pursuing this a little bit more seriously.
What did you study?
Personal development. I studied a lot of philosophy, Socrates, Plato. I read some Robert Greene books. He has books on mastery, 48 Laws of Power, a lot of things having to do with just human nature. I studied wealth and finance, you know, Napoleon Hill, Robert
Kiyosaki. Think and Grow Rich.
Yes.
Napoleon Hill.
Absolutely. Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, books like that. The Power of Focus, The Secrets of a Millionaire Mind by Harv Eker.
And something led you back. Did you go back to college or some more formal academic background?
I went back to college at about 24 because all that time I was reading and speaking and educating, you know, people always be like, oh, you're pretty smart. And I was like, you know what, let me go to school and see how smart I really am, you know, because it's been a long time. And with my interests in reading and speaking, I figured if I took arts and science, the skills that I learned from class, I could easily apply to what I was doing in life. So even if it didn't particularly lead to a specific career after the completion of school, I knew I could always use the skills with what I wanted to do. So to me, it was a win-win situation. And it proved to be actually very instrumental into the creating of this book, because I had no idea, you know, certain skills I had until I went to school, such as essay writing and things of that nature. Certain classes and certain teachers definitely gave me a lot of confidence.
You went back to school as a mature student at 24. There may be listeners who don't quite get how that works.
Yeah.
There are people who leave high school for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
You can get back into programs, especially college programs, and there's often a kind of bridging or some kind of something that helps you through that, that brings you up to speed, because people's confidence isn't quite there to go through an academic program.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just say a little bit about that? Which college did you go to, and what was that entry point for you?
The school I went to was Centennial College. The process basically entailed me coming in to do a test. I guess it was an aptitude test because I'd been out of school for so long. They wanted to see, you know, if I was at even the English and math levels required to go into college. So I went, I did the test, I did really great, and I even end up, you know, with an A plus at the end of the course. So it was a beautiful thing.
You know, getting an A plus at 24 after knowing that high school did not work for you, and
yeah.
that, you know, my guess is you weren't getting A pluses in high school at the time.
No, not at all.
How did that change your self-perception, getting an A plus at Centennial College?
Yes, the A plus was actually in logical self-defense, and it just made me feel like I could do anything that I really applied myself to. I got that A plus by applying myself and making the effort, and I was like, you know, if I put effort in something else, why can't I get the same result? So to all the listeners out there, if you're thinking about going back to school, take the time to decide what you really want to do, and if school is a part of that path, then go take that test, and I greatly encourage it.
Great advice. We're talking to Matthew Taylor here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM and worldwide at www.ciut.fm. Matthew, I want to pick up your story in a little bit, but I want to bring Andrea into the conversation. Andrea Bukod, you've been nodding a lot as Matthew's been telling his story. You've been an outreach worker. You've been in social services. You've been working in a lot of different fields, probably with youth, a lot like the Matthew that he described when he was a teenager. Just before we get to your story, what made you nod? It sounded like you had recognition when Matthew was talking about his story.
I think just because a lot of the things that I have chosen to do within my career have supported young people that are disengaged from many of the institutional settings, such as post-secondary. You know, maybe they find themselves detained versus being within a school setting where they feel like they're being engaged, you know? So a lot of the work that I've done, I've worked in an organization called PEACH, which stands for Promoting Education and Community Health. And this is an alternative education space. I also support many alternative education spaces within the city of Toronto. I'm a board member with Schools Without Borders, as well as a parent supporter or on the parent council of Lost Lyrics, which is an alternative education for young people in high school.
Great. So you have your own kids who are involved in that?
Yes, I have a 13-year-old daughter.
Nice. So you're doing a lot of stuff, Andrea. Let's just step back a little bit in your own story. How far back does your interest in both arts and social service go?
I think my interest in arts has always been there. I think the first Christmas present I got from my dad was a record player. So that's what I was into. If it was music, fashion, earrings, anything that had an artistic piece to it, I was always interested in. I would say maybe in high school is when I decided that I wanted to continue working and helping people. I think that's something that's just innate in my personality or in my character.
So unlike Matthew's story, did you continue with high school and go straight into
I did continue with high school. Yeah. I did take a year off of going to post-secondary an institution. I did go back. I was pregnant with my daughter by the second year, and I left. And in the decision of deciding if I should go back or not is when I really started to dig into what my career could look like, because I was already working in the field and I felt that I was very pigeonholed. I was working in group homes at the time.
What was the role? What was that first role that you had in social services?
I was a child and youth worker in a group home, so I was working overnights, weekends, you know, really engaging the young people that were on site. But I think I had some feelings, I guess we could say, about the process of how young people ended up in these spaces.
Yes.
And how they were being engaged. So I picked up and I left.
How did you get that first job, right, in one of these group homes? And I don't think listeners would be familiar with it. These group homes, at least in the city of Toronto, are sprinkled throughout the city. Sometimes you don't even know where they are. I know I used to live right around the corner from one, and it took me a while to figure out what that place was.
Well, I think it's developed that way, right? Really, it's a home for young people that are not at home with their families.
Yes.
So the goal is not for them to stand out and for people to know that this is a that this is a group home, but really for it to mesh within the community.
Yes.
And so that people don't know that there is a huge group of young people living in this house being supported by workers.
That was exactly the case in this one that lived that was near me, except from time to time there would be a police car in front because people would break their curfew.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get that first job?
Through my placement.
Yes.
I was at George Brown at the time, and I was placed with a man by the name of Victor Du. He had some group homes in the East, and I went to work with him. And after my second year, he called me back to do part-time, and that's how I started within the social services.
Great. So that's a good story. People are always interested in the first entry point into something like that. So what happened? You were working there in the group home. You were noticing why people were there. You were starting mm-hmm. to ask yourself some big questions, and you were having your own feelings about your own job. What happened next?
I had my daughter, so I took a break. But of course, everyone needs money, so I went back. But that's when it felt like it was really settling in with me, that I didn't enjoy how young people were being removed from their home, how, if at all, they were being reintegrated back into the home. And also, it's a very unnatural space, unfortunately. It's a process that we try to work with. But they're being taken out of their homes, and they're in a home with a whole bunch of young people that they don't know. So it's a lot of difficulty, a lot of strain, a lot of heartache. There's also definitely good times where people are, you know, they have lifelong friendships from being in these spaces. But I just felt like this wasn't the place that I could do my best work in terms of helping people.
So what happened next?
So I left from there and I opened up my own business. I actually got pretty frustrated with a lot of the bureaucracy and institutional pieces because I love people, but you know, that outside pieces
yes.
that we build around it. So I left and I decided I don't want to do this anymore. And I opened up my own business with a very good friend, Kadeen. We opened up first it was an event planning business, and then it extended into earrings. We were selling antique earrings that we were collecting and reselling across the city at different events. And that's kind of where we went from there.
So, but I know that that's not the end of the story because you've done a whole bunch of other things after that. So, you know, and we've had entrepreneurs and people who have started their own business here on Career Buzz, and we've heard their stories. And sometimes these ventures fly, mm-hmm. and sometimes people realize that they aren't quite what they thought they would be, and certain aspects of running your own business are more difficult than they had anticipated. How did it go for you?
It went well. I just think that at that time I didn't do enough research as much as I am aware now.
Yes.
So within maybe the second year, my friend, we decided to put it down, not end it, but just put it down. But also at that time, because of the work that I had done within the field, people were calling me and saying, you know, Andrea, maybe you should come back. We haven't seen you. You're good at what you do. So I avoided people for a long time.
But you eventually did go back.
I did.
And what was that next? There was another trajectory there of steps in
yes.
social services.
And that's when I kind of really started looking into alternative education, because I realized that a lot of the spaces that I was in, I wasn't necessarily getting what I wanted in order to progress my career.
Yes.
So I really started to dig into these alternative education spaces, and that's how I ended up at Peach, working with young people who were being, suspended or expelled from the Toronto District School Board and the Catholic District School Board for various of reasons. And they were coming to a local school space with us. And that's kind of when I started to get into, you know, young people really saying, this education is not doing what I need for me.
Yes.
And really helping them build this pathway. How do we start to change this pathway if the traditional system and the way that it's set is not working for you?
So you would have seen people exactly like Matthew. I mean, it just sounds like, having heard a little bit of his story, there's going to be a lot of people who just don't feel like they fit in.
Definitely.
And that there is a place here like Peach, as you were saying, the Promoting Education and Community Health
yep.
is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So how long did you stay there before you shifted again into more of the arts work?
I was in the school program at first, and then I was offered the position of a provincially funded youth outreach worker in the Jane and Finch community. So I was residing at Peach as an office, but I was actually employed by the province to do outreach.
Yes.
And at that time, I was also running. The executive director there gave me a studio program to run. There was maybe two people there, and she said, you know, do something with this. So myself and the studio engineer, Nice Touch, worked very hard. And,
shout out Nice Touch.
Worked very, very hard to increase the youth capacity in the space. And I think by the time we were finished, we had something like more than 200 young people that were attending the studio program.
Wow. So it really grew.
It really grew. We created many partnerships. We did quite a few things. We worked with We brought in people like, shout out Dwayne Dixon, who is a part of Manifesto now, who's executive director of Manifesto. But at that time, he was working with Urban Music Association of Canada.
Yes.
And we brought in just many different people and really tried to sit with the young people and say that not only did you need to have to, you don't have to just look at being an MC. You could look at graphic design. You could look at accounting. You could look at entertainment law. You know, there's so many things within the arts and culture that you don't necessarily have to be that face person. Like, if you have an attraction to this sector, we can look at a plethora of things. If you're a songwriter, you can write songs for other individuals if you're not comfortable singing and or performing those songs, you know? So really opening up their avenues and their eyes around that piece. And at that time, I was starting to really plug into a lot of the arts and culture spaces within the city of Toronto. The executive director position popped up for the Westside Arts Hub. And, you know, a couple people called and said, we really want to see you over there. You know, let's see what can happen. Let's see what we can do. And that's how I ended up at the Westside Arts Hub.
Great story, Andrea. Thanks for sharing that story. And it's amazing to see how the dots connect. It was, Matthew, your metaphor connecting the dots. And I think how illustrative your story is, Andrea, to hear how those dots connected and keeping yourself moving in the direction that felt right. And then connecting and networking and building contact so that when an opportunity like the Westside Arts Hub came up, they thought of you.
Definitely. And really looking at, you know, I connect education now to arts and culture. So making sure that I'm in those spaces, because I still hold on to, not all the time do people find what they're looking for when they start searching for it, you know, so how do we create these spaces? So we do things like, how do we create a hip hop curriculum that we could be using in the schools? Like, these are the things that I'm really passionate about and want to see happen so that the young people who are not engaged feel like there is a space for them and that they are engaged.
Yes. We're talking to Andrea Boucault and Matthew Taylor here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, at CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a short musical break and station ID. We're going to come back with the continuing stories of Andrea and Matthew, and we are going to have the book giveaway, a copy of Student of Life from Matthew Taylor. So stay tuned and stay with us.
Cry. Career Buzz is brought to you by Harry Rosen Menswear. Visit us at 82 Bloor Street West and other GTA locations, or shop online at harryrosen.com for all your professional business wardrobe needs.
Do you, like Albert Einstein, believe that imagination is more important than knowledge? Do you need a way to stretch your boundaries and explore your artistic edge? Then Hart House has just the thing you need. Each term, we offer a series of creative classes in filmmaking, photography, and theatrical arts taught by some of the top artists in their craft. From finding your public speaking voice, to learning how to use your new camera, to writing your very first screenplay, Hart House's creative classes inspire the imagination and enrich the mind. Visit harthouse.ca for class descriptions and schedules.
Career Buzz is brought to you in part by Samsung Canada. Live in an infinite world of possibilities. Experience more, live more, and capture more with the Samsung Galaxy S4.
The evolution continues. CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
We're back at Career Buzz, and I'm your host, Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at careercycles.com. Before continuing on with today's show, I want to let listeners know there's a great archive of Career Buzz stories and inspiring career messages for you. It's at the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com. If you go to the August 28th show, we had two guests. One was all about back to business. It was an interview with the director of Back Clinics of Canada, Dr. Ron Nussbaum. And also, we had Heather Bennett talking about late career realities and the new retirement. What are people wanting? What are they needing when they consider the next steps later in their careers? You can hear the two things that surprised Heather when she was doing some research about later career and the new retirement. So click the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com for that, and a host of other great shows. Today we're talking to Andrea Boucault. She's managing director of Westside Arts Hub, and Matthew Taylor. He's author of Student of Life, My Lessons Are Yours. Matthew, we left your story a few minutes ago when you had gone back to school in your mid-20s. You went back to Centennial College. Now, that was already a few years ago, and you were talking about how that, well, it increased your confidence. You started to get good marks in a way that you never had in high school. When you graduated from the college program, what happened next?
Well, I graduated, and tell you the truth, I went back to doing music. I was doing a lot of performances. I went on to work with some of the best talent in the country, people like Shy Wisdom, Bird and Keys, even outside the country, people like Cardiac, Jay Mills. These guys have made music on a world-class level. So I just basically went out there and tried to expand my knowledge and get my name out there, you know, in the music field. And I also kept educating myself, and that's what eventually led to some of the newer opportunities that I've come upon recently.
So back to those, a few things have opened up now, and now you're at a point in life where you're trying to make things work and earn a living. And I think Career Buzz listeners are always interested to know how people do that. You know, so in the most recent iteration of your career, you've got this book that you've put out there, you're working in a mortgage business. How did these last few pieces come together?
Well, you know, it was really tough trying to do this music thing and not really getting all that I wanted out of it. So I started opening up my mind to other opportunities. It was difficult to get employment as well because, you know, my activities have always been sort of like, you know, more of self-employed type of individual type of things. Not really, I didn't have too much work history, so getting a job was difficult. I went on to sell legal insurance for a little bit. A friend of a friend had an opportunity for me, so it was a self-employed business. I did fairly well in that, and that's what kind of eventually led me up into the mortgage consulting business, because I felt like insurance and mortgage, they're closely aligned. You have to deal with clients, you have to know how to deal with people, you have to know how to prospect, you have to know how to close. And I felt it was important to develop those skills and get involved with that, because ultimately, if you know how to sell, you can create your own opportunities, not just now, but in the future. So it was important to me to maximize those opportunities. So that's how the mortgage business and the author thing came along as well, because I thought it'd be very powerful to give people the insight that I needed. I mentioned earlier that books were very instrumental in making changes in my life, and the same information that made changes for me, I knew could make changes for somebody else and also create an asset that could pay me and my family for many years to come.
So how is that going? How is the financial aspect of your career going right now?
It's coming along, you know. So far, the book is doing units in Canada, Great Britain, and the U.S., and I'm looking to expand upon that. So I'm grateful, you know. I don't think a lot of people can say that they made money in different countries before the age of 30.
And the mortgage business, people might be interested in that. It's another means to both do work and earn a living using some specialized skills. How's that going?
I love it, you know, because I get to educate people on something that they're all going to eventually need. And I don't have to charge them a fee for it as well. So I get to give the gift of education, and I get to put people, you know, in homes that maybe, you know, on their own, they wouldn't have been able to get into that home. And I think that's very powerful, and I take pride in that.
If you don't charge a fee for that service, how do people earn money in that work?
The way it works is you provide the information to the client. The client basically tells you what they need. Me as an agent, I have access to a variety of products offered by different lenders. I find the particular product that's suitable for the particular client. And the lender is the one who actually pays me, so not the client.
How much can a reasonably good mortgage broker, is that the right term for it?
Mortgage agent broker,
mortgage
yes.
How much can a reasonably good mortgage agent earn in a month?
In a month? If you're doing three deals, which is ideally what's expected of a mortgage broker, you can make anything from $8,000 to $12,000 a month.
Are you somewhere near that?
I just started, but that's the plan. I'm definitely working towards it.
People are curious. Thanks for sharing that information.
No problem.
We've been talking to Matthew Taylor here, author of Student of Life on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. We're on CIUT 89.5 FM and worldwide, CIUT.FM. Andrea Bucot, over to you. We followed your story before the break up until this most recent position. But I know you've been very involved in social services. And in 2001, you won the Outreach Worker of the Year Award. First of all, congratulations. That sounds like a great award.
Thank you. It was actually 2011 with the Toronto Youth Cabinet. Young people that I had worked with nominated me on my last year as a YAO. I think I felt that I had been doing this work for a little bit too long and that I wanted to expand my knowledge and really look at running an organization. So at that time, young people that I work with, that I basically laughed, cried with, watched them grow, wrote letters of support to the Toronto Youth Cabinet through the City of Toronto, and I was nominated the Outreach Worker of the Year.
How did winning an award influence you personally and your career?
I think it was extremely
yes.
exciting. I went with my daughter. I accepted the award. And I was amongst a full group of peers of people that I had worked with from across the city. And I think that's where it sat the best with me. I didn't necessarily want someone that I didn't know to give me the award or people that I hadn't worked with, but people that knew my work, knew the things that I had done, and they're the ones that delivered this award to me.
That's so great. So we often see, sometimes I read bios and it says, you know, Andrea Bucot, award-winning outreach worker or award-winning, and it always seems to boost their influence or their confidence, and things kind of flow from that. Did that influence the opportunities that came directly afterwards?
Actually, I had already been employed, so I had already left the provincial YAO position, and it was my last month. So I was already on my way out, making an exit plan, going towards the Westside Arts Hub. So it was kind of like a celebration, you know, like this is the award to wrap up this part of my career, and I'm going to move towards a managing director of an arts organization.
Amazing. And I know there's a bunch of really interesting things going on. I went to your Facebook page to see what was happening there. It looked like there was all kinds of interesting things. What's going on right now at the Westside Arts Hub and around your community?
Okay. Right now, we just wrapped up 106 in New York, the sixth annual 106 in New York, which is a urban arts festival that really looks at the emerging talent of young people in the city. You know, they make an application to us. We review whatever they submit in terms of music. Maybe they're going to dance. Maybe they're going to do poetry. And we create this huge lineup of young people, and we have a show. So we just had one September 14th. It was an amazing show. We had a full house. We actually put it back into the hands of the community. So what we did is we went to the local high schools and did auditions. So shout out to the 106 in York executive team. We went to each school, did auditions, chose young people from those schools, and then had a culminating, I guess, audition in the middle of Jane and Finch Mall, which created this huge community buzz. And then we brought all of the young people to the theater, which is attached to the library that the Westside Arts Hub's in. There is a huge theater there, and we had a huge showcase where we invited youth from across the city to come out and see.
It's so refreshing, Andrea, to hear the great things that are going on in that community. If one listens to the news, you consistently hear bad news. Do you know? And of course, it can't be all bad news. And so, but where's the good news? So I'm really glad we've got some good news here.
We actually work really hard with media to get them to come out when we do have good
stories. Good.
It doesn't always happen that way, but we do push. We send out a lot of information to media. So if there is any journalists that are listening, definitely come out when we're having these positive events, because there's so many great things happening in the Jane and Finch community that go unnoticed, that people don't know.
Is there anything coming up, like something that that listeners can check into in the next little while?
Yes, monthly we have something in partnership with Black Creek Community Health Center called Freedom Fridays. It was a space developed by three community health workers from Black Creek Community Health Center, where they create a space for young people to come in and do poetry, talk about their lives and their current. It's really just a family youth-focused space. This year we're partnering with York University, OPERG at York, to talk about art and revolution. And this month we're doing it actually in Yorkgate Mall, in the parking lot of Yorkgate Mall.
Yorkgate Mall.
Yeah, the last Friday of every month is always Freedom Friday.
At what time, and how do people find out more?
It starts at 6 o'clock. We finish at 9. They can definitely find the Freedom Friday page on Facebook. And you can also follow them on Twitter at Free on Fridays.
Great. One final question, Andrea, just on this conversation that we've been having. You know, now you're in a position where you're leading an organization, and, you know, listeners are often interested in how to get involved in any area. You've now had quite a good amount of experience in social services. If people are interested in getting involved in social services, they like the ideas of some of the things that they've heard from you, what's their path? And in particular, how important is it to get a diploma? Colleges have all these youth outreach worker diplomas. How important is that?
I think it's a level playing field in terms of the diploma is important, but definitely having the skills and the ability to go out and meet people. Because many people have the degree, but you don't have the ability to talk to the young people and really approach them in a non-judgmental way. Like, that is the very most important piece, that we're not here to judge people and tell them this is how you should and or shouldn't do something, but how can I be of support to you and really help you cut those paths to the goal that you envision for yourself, not the goal that I have for you.
How do you evaluate that? If you're hiring somebody, now you're a director, you may be hiring somebody, how do you evaluate people to see if they're a good fit?
And particularly with the interview process, I always give the person that I'm interviewing all of the questions. I want you to be as comfortable as possible. I give you 30 minutes with the interview questions that you can sit and make notes. I want you to sit and have an open conversation with me and really be honest if you feel that this is a fit for you. You know, it's not the goal of me to bring you in here, hide the questions, you know, trip you up. you're answering, you're unsure. That is not what I'm looking for. I'm really looking for someone who is focused, who is really driven, who wants to be a part of the team. You know, a lot of the things that we do is volunteer run. So you have to have that passion. You have to love it, you know, because a lot of it starts volunteer. And then we start building that fund, that base of funds and going out there and getting grants. But you need to attach to it because that's what you want to do.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. That's great. And that's such an innovative approach to give people the interview questions in advance.
Well, that was actually something that happened to me. And I think that was the best interview I ever had, you know, and I really took that piece on and said, that is a great idea to make sure that people are comfortable.
Absolutely. Great. Thanks for sharing that, Andrea. Matthew, let's come back to you. And I want to just dig into the book a little bit and talk a little bit about some of the lessons Student of Life. And as listeners hear this, if you have a comment or question on what you're hearing, we have a copy of the book here, so give us a call. The number to call is 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000, and do join us on the air with a comment or question. Matthew, so many good lessons in the book here. I saw a lot that I wanted to talk to you about. One of them is called The Power of Visualization.
Yes.
And in it, you talk about the power of using your imagination to kind of picture positive outcomes, your own positive outcome, and to avoid visualizing negative outcomes.
Absolutely.
So can you just talk a little bit about that one particular lesson and how you learned that?
Every single success book I read or a successful person I read about, this seemed to be a common theme. In order to believe that something positive or success is going to happen for you, you have to literally visualize yourself in that position first in your mind, in detail, you know. Very instrumental. If you can't see it, then more than likely it won't happen. So I felt it was important to put that in the book so people could see themselves successful and, you know, in that way make it more believable for themselves.
Andrew, do you have any experience with that yourself? The positive imagination that will harness people's action in the world versus the negative space they can get into when they just envision all of the negative things that's happening, and the power of using your mind to influence your own experience as opposed to just letting your experience influence your mind.
Definitely. I mean, as a youth outreach worker, we used to do something called the wraparound. So we would work with young people who they would build a team of people that supported them. We would sit and have monthly or weekly meetings with young people and really build a direction in 12 different categories that included things from education right down to spirituality. And a lot of those meetings were not just you envisioning where you want to see yourself, but really looking at people on the table and saying, can you hold me accountable for this piece? I need you to support me with this, and this is how I need you to support me with it. And everyone's just sitting across from each other, documenting this, and then going off together for the month and looking at, you know, was this successful? How do we start tweaking the path? Do we still continue? But I think it incorporates a part of what Matthew said around having that visualization, but also now attaching physical people to it and saying, I need you to hold me accountable to what I'm saying I want to do.
There's a career writer, a well-known career writer called Barbara Sher. She has something that she calls success teams, which sounds remarkably like the wraparound concept. You know, you have everybody's mutually supportive. If it's five people, each person has a vision, and the other four people are supporting that one person when they talk, and then you take turns. Is it kind of like that?
Very much, just that everyone there is really there for that person.
Yeah.
Right? So I think a success team might be a little bit different because we might all be looking to do something. But when we gather within Wraparound, it's really focused on that person. Like, I am here to dedicate this time to you and support you in your goals.
There's, again, let me give out the numbers here in case people have comments or questions. But join us on the air and win a copy of the book. It's 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000. Matthew, there's a tough chapter here called The Gun Versus Education, Brain or Brawn, which one is more powerful? You bring up Obama, you talk a bit about Obama in this lesson, but I guess this has got to be a tough lesson. We hear on the news gun violence, we wonder what could have led somebody to make some of these decisions to use a weapon. Here you're talking about this very thing. Will you use a weapon? Will you use violence? Or is there an alternative? What's that alternative? And what's that alternative going to get you? And how do you choose that alternative?
Right.
What can you say about how you learned that lesson?
I think this was one of the most important lessons that I included in the book. And hopefully it's going to have a lot of impact with, you know, our younger generation coming up. I think a lot of our youth today are misguided. They think that they have to find their power in means of doing destructive things for not only themselves and others. And I want to emphasize in this chapter that any true power is going to come from your mind and the skills you develop and the knowledge that you get and apply. And it's far more powerful than any gun that you could put in your hand. And I use Obama as an example because, you know, everybody's going to have mixed political views. But the fact of the matter is you can't rise up the rankings to become the president of the United States without doing a good amount of development on yourself and educating yourself and using your mind. You know, as I said in the book, Barack Obama didn't shoot himself into power. He didn't kill people to become the president. It was strictly mind power. You know, it was mind power that brought him from point A to point B, as it could bring anyone from point A to point B. So, you know, don't look for power in external things. Look for power in yourself.
Right on. Andrew, I'm sure in your experiences with working with youth, you've been exposed to all kinds of situations and decisions. Violence is out there. What are some of the things that you've seen be effective to engage youth or people who might be thinking about violence and moving them towards, as Matthew is saying, away from that and towards self-development?
I think really supporting their goals, right? Like, I think Matthew has done a great job at capturing what I call hope. There's a lot of young people that don't see themselves in their future. You know, you ask them, what are you doing when you're 20? And they're saying, I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow. Right? So I think that he's actually captured a piece of that in terms of what is hope and how do we start to direct it, right? So we need to, and it's something that I walk with all the time when I work with young people, how do I instill or help you instill hope into yourself so that you do see a future for yourself, so that you do see, you know, a family, whatever that future is, a career, traveling, whatever it may be, but really looking at that and then creating a path. So if you tell me it's entrepreneurship that I want to do, well then, okay, there's all these different pieces that are happening in the city. How do you get connected to these spaces? How are you supported so that you're not just given the information, but that you're supported to go there? Because it's easy to give young people information. Doesn't mean they're going to get up and go, right? So how do you find someone that will support you? I think mentorship is hugely important. Hugely important.
And that's going to help people develop those ideas for their future?
Definitely. Because you meet someone who might be doing something that you, it might have been a quick thought, but you meet someone who's doing it. So you have that opportunity to ask as many questions as you want, be as candid as you want, find out, you know, how did you get down this path?
And that's going to inspire hope. You were saying hope as a key tool, resource, personal quality that's really going to help people make better decisions because they're hopeful about their future.
Definitely. We need that for people so that people can make better decisions, that hope.
We're talking to Andrea Bucco and Matthew Taylor here on Career Buzz. We have one copy of Student of Life to win for the caller who calls us, 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000. Last one, Matthew, just to pick up here. There are some things we should have learned in high school. You got five of them.
Yes.
You know, and a number of them actually have to do with money.
Yes.
And we're not learning that in high school. What's one thing we should have learned in high school?
We definitely should have learned at least assets and liabilities. I mean, you know, if going to school is, if the purpose of going to school is to prepare you for life, I mean, being financially literate is a huge part of life. Knowing your assets and liabilities is a huge part of financial literacy. So if we're really going to promote well-being and try to create the best future possible for our young people, then I definitely think financial literacy has to somehow be added into the curriculum. So from young, you know, we can start making some better decisions because, you know, assets, liabilities, rule of 72, how taxes work. These are things I learned about later on in life. And if I learned about it sooner, I might have made some more well-informed decisions.
I know one of the inspirations for you mentioned was the Robert
Kiyosaki.
Rich Dad Poor Dad. And he talks a lot about learning financial literacy. We do have a caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air. What's your comment or question?
Hi there. My name is Jennifer, and I have a question for your two guests. As a brand new mother, I was wondering what's one key thing I can do to make sure that my son will have the best chance to succeed in life?
Great question, Jennifer. We just have about a minute left, so I'm just going to turn it over to the guests here for a quick answer, but thanks for your question.
Be involved. Be involved in school, and go to the school meetings, get to know your teachers, get to know the individuals that are around your child. And if they are not giving your child what you need, then find the spaces. There are a whole slew of programs that exist in the community, and they will support you through this process. Never go to these meetings by yourself. Always go with somebody so it's documented.
Great advice.
To continue on that, I would say just at the earliest age possible, start instilling the values that are important to you and that you think will be important to your child. You know, make sure they know education is important, reading is important, and being smart is cool. And your child should be just fine.
Excellent. Guys, thanks for joining us here on Career Buzz. If there's one thing to leave listeners with, something that you've learned from your own twists and turns in your careers, just in a couple of words or a sentence, Matthew?
Know what you want, be bold, and go get it. Only person who could stop you is you, and I'm living proof.
Great advice. And Andrea?
Have no fear. Try it out. And if something that you don't like, you can try something else out.
That's great, you guys. We've had great guests. I know we have another couple of callers here, but we're just about out of time. So join us next time when we're on Career Buzz. It's Wednesdays at 11 a.m. And you've been listening to Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM. I've been your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com. If you have comments or questions on today's show, shoot me an email. It's Mark with a K at careercycles.com. Thanks to my guests today, Matthew Taylor and Andrea Bucot. And technical production today was by Lyndon, Rachel, and Madeline. An MP3 of today's show will be available from the Career Buzz link at careercycles.com. Catch Career Buzz every Wednesday, 11 a.m. till noon here on CIUT. That's it for today's live version of Career Buzz. Thank you for listening.